Good morning. We are now live with our senator from the 14th District here on KLCK, Senator Curtis King. Good morning, and how you doing?
We're doing well, sir. Thank you for the opportunity to talk to you this morning.
We really appreciate it. It's been a while since you and I have talked, I think.
I think it has. Yes, sir.
Yeah, and I appreciate that because Tracy just set this up so I can talk to you. So it's really cool. So we'll be talking about every 3 weeks, I think.
I hope that's the case. Look forward to it.
Yeah, and we've been talking with Gina Musbrecher and Chris Corey from the House side for a while, so it's nice to be able to get things going with you. So what's it like being back in person again?
Well, I'll tell you what. It is obviously the way government should be run. The last 2 years where we've done most of our governing by Zoom, I guess I could say it worked, but it didn't work as well as it normally should. Being back in person changes the whole dynamics of how our government is run. The fact that you can be in a committee meeting and with your fellow committee members and have conversations and ask questions, to be on the floor and to be able to walk over and kneel down and talk to somebody about a bill. All of those face-to-face kinds of meetings is the way government should be. And it's about relationships. It's about those conversations. So I'm very, very pleased that we're back in person.
And don't you feel you can kind of read a person better? You look at their face, you can see their reactions, you can get the tone of the voice better than on Zoom. And, just being with people and being emotionally tied, you just can't beat that.
Well, you can't. I mean, it's much easier to say, well, we're not going to hear that bill, or I'm not going to vote for that, or, mm-hmm. or blah, whatever. It's a lot easier to do that when you're on Zoom. Rather than when you're in a room or the individual is across the table from you and you have to look them in the eye and make those statements. So, I think this is the way government should be. And I'm just so pleased that we're back in person.
When I've been on Zoom myself, I'm thinking, let's just get this thing over with, Let's not dicker on anything. Let's just get it done and forget about it so we can just do other things. And I think, like you say, being in person where you can talk face-to-face slows things down and you can consider every point and make it work for you.
Well, and to your point, the body language, all of those, the inflection in the voice, you don't always pick those things up over a Zoom call, and it all makes a difference. It really does.
Now, is Zoom going to still be used for, talking to some of your constituents or maybe having someone testify from, let's say, across the state? Will that still be utilized?
Yes, we are. I think that's a good thing. I mean, we're as busy as we are. In a lot of cases, somebody that comes to testify will probably get 2 minutes. Sometimes it's three. Sometimes if it's a slower day, which I haven't seen yet, they don't put a limit on it. But think of somebody from Spokane who's got to drive for 5 hours or 6 hours one way to come over to a committee hearing and get 2 minutes to testify. Doesn't make a lot of sense, and it excludes a lot of people who just can't take a day off of work or whatever, but they can get on their computer, they can call in and make their testimony heard over a Zoom call, and I think that's a good thing.
We've learned a lot about Zoom, and I think now we're in a situation where it's the best of both worlds, being in person, like you say, and then when you need to, talk to your constituents from anywhere in the state using Zoom when it's necessary.
Oh, I agree. I'm not a big Zoom fan when it comes to legislation and that type of thing, but there are times when it works really well. When you want to talk about being on Zoom, I had a committee meeting. We were our task force meeting earlier last year after we got out of session, I want to say it was scheduled to be 6 hours long. It was absolutely excruciating.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Anyway.
And plus, you got to be on your best behavior. You got to be sitting in front of the camera all the time. And when you're shifting around, 6 hours, that is just awful.
It was. And we didn't do it again. So
there you
it was
go.
Awful for everybody.
So for you, for starting the legislative session, which I think started 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? Or was it just last week?
Yep. No, we're just, this is start of our third week. Yep.
Start of third week. What has been the main focus for you going into the session?
Well, just trying to find those critical areas that, since we are in the minority, we have 29 Democrats and 20 Republicans. So I'm just trying to find those areas where we have some concern. And looking at the bills and what bills do we like, which ones don't we like, which ones are, what I would consider the worst, and then looking at those and saying, well, can we do anything to change them so they're, you take a very bad bill and try to get it amended and work with the prime sponsors and others and see if they would accept some changes. When you're in the minority, you do what you can, and that includes working on a very bad bill and amending it, just trying to, and it may end up just being a bad bill. But that's your job. That's what you should be doing, in my opinion. And fortunately or unfortunately, if they do accept your amendments, then most of the time you got to vote for the bill. Otherwise, why would they even talk to you? So. All of those factors come into play, but that's what makes this place challenging, let alone working on your own bills and your own plans of how we move this state forward.
Yeah, and oftentimes if you can get enough support and your bill makes common sense and it's something that the majority wants to support, oftentimes you can get a lot of Democrats to see your way on things.
That's the truth. It has to be reasonable, and you have to be able to explain, you know, the rationale behind why you think the bill is important and what it's going to accomplish, and then work with people if there's, you know, some minor changes that they want to make or, you know, some additions. Believe me, I know I don't know everything, and so it's a matter of listening and then trying to move forward as best you can.
And you have some of the common differences, too. I mean, it seems like you got one side that wants to raise taxes and more spending, and the other side, the conservative side, that says, hey, we need to save money because things are too expensive and our tax rates are out of sight.
Well, and it's the truth. I mean, we're looking at additional taxes in this session, and yet we have more money than we've ever had in the history of the state of Washington. And yet we still feel like, or the other side feels like, we got to raise taxes to raise more money. You have to look at what the reasoning is behind that, and it'd be hard put to have to support that when you have money, the amount of money that we've seen in the last year or two.
And I want to talk to you about some of your bills specifically, but just a couple more questions. Your constituents and people in general been telling you going into the session? What are they concerned about, whether it be in person or by telephone or by emails? Some of the things they're worried about?
Well, I think the very first one is safety. I think everyone is at least what we hear and what I've heard from my constituents is that we have changed so many laws. We've gone after the police in the sense of, you know, unfunding the police and some of the bills that we passed, like not being able to pursue a variety of those kinds of things, has led to, a variety, of increases in traffic deaths because we've lessened the number of police officers that we have, state patrol, sheriffs, county. It's amazing what we've done. And so we are on last year is on record to be the highest number of traffic deaths we've ever had in the state. It's on record to be, I believe, the highest number of drug overdose deaths that we've seen in this state. And it's because we have laws that said if you find someone, if you stop someone for doing something and you find out they have fentanyl or heroin in their pockets, you can't arrest them. You all you can say to them is, if you'd like, we have a program available. If you'd like to go to that program, we can help you get off of these drugs. And that's it. Mm-hmm. They just say, well, I'm not interested, not that polite, I can guarantee you, and they can walk away.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Bill says if you do that twice, the third time you can arrest them. But how are you going to keep track of that unless it's the same officer? And then you got to document it. I mean, we've taken our legal system, our laws, and we've just thrown them out the window. And therefore, you're seeing this huge increase in crime, a huge increase in traffic deaths, drug overdose deaths. It's amazing. And we need to turn that around.
Yeah, and the big cities, too, their drug dealers, they can do all their work in broad daylight in front of everybody because they know they can get away with what they're doing.
The number of police, Seattle is an example. I forget the percentage, but it's got to be close to 40 or 50% of the number of police they've lost because the city council underfunded them. And then when crime went through the roof, they said, oh, we got to change that. So they tried to get some of them to come back, but they still have members on their city council. People, that don't want to fund the police. Businesses are moving out of Seattle, downtown Seattle. Starbucks closed 4, 5, 6 of their stores down there because they said it's unsafe. They can't protect their workers. And they're closing them up. Nike has a big store in downtown Seattle. They announced last week they're going to close it for the very same reason. Mm-hmm. They got people coming in and stealing their product. They can't keep their workers safe. And this is downtown Seattle.
Yeah,
so
and
who
workers,
wants to go to?
Yeah, and workers who are going to stores all boarded up and everything, it's just not attractive. And so people are saying, I'm not going to shop this way anymore.
No, and that's why you've seen the increase in Amazon shop by mail type things.
Sure.
And it's bad. I mean, because a lot of these businesses are small businesses, mom and pop stores, and they're all impacted as well.
And even in Yakima, I've been told, you can maybe confirm this, that if you call the police on a matter, they'll say, is anybody hurt? Has anyone been killed? And basically saying if it's a lot of just a common everyday situation, you like take a number and we'll get back to you in a couple days.
Well, I haven't heard that, but I know that the response is slower than it normally has been,
mm-hmm.
Just because of the lack of police.
Mm-hmm.
As an example, I was in Spokane after a session last year. Someone broke into my car. They stole my flashlight. They didn't get much, but they stole my flashlight. It was more of a pain in the you-know-what because I had to get the window replaced, clean up the car, all those things. But they stole my flashlight. So I went to Bi-Mart to buy a new flashlight, my wife and I. And they're behind a locked case. So we got an attendant, a gal that worked there, and came over and talked to her, and she unlocked the case. We got the flashlight we wanted, and in talking to her, we said, well, how are they? She said 2 weeks ago, a guy walked in the front door of Bi-Mart, went all the way to the back, found the most expensive chainsaw that he could find, picked it up, and turned around and walked all the way back through the store and out the door.
Hmm.
And they, as employees, have been instructed, you just let them go.
Yeah.
It happens all over. It isn't just Yakima. I mean, Best Buy, it's amazing what is happening. And these stores can't survive if we don't learn, if we don't stop this. But the people know they're not going to get arrested. And the chances of, you know, we've had people, we had a guy that robbed a bank, and the police were chasing him, and he called up the sheriff's department or state patrol and says, hey, I'm being pursued, and you can't do that legally. It's against the law. They can't pursue me.
Huh.
I mean, this is...
I know.
I mean, it's amazing to me. This is what our society has come to. It's scary.
And something else that's also very amazing, we're seeing it in the Dalles, too, where a homeless community can take over a parking lot, take over a building, and they seem to be getting their way. They just keep on doing it, and the police don't stop it.
Well, we've given them more authority than we would a common, ordinary citizen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you drive down I-5 here coming to Olympia, and you can look in two or three places, and you see these encampments, and it is just trash, trash, trash.
Yeah.
You know that there's needles, there's excrement, there's all kinds of stuff in there. That if a individual like you or me or a business did that in the areas that we live in, we would be arrested.
Mm-hmm.
They'd throw the book at it.
Right.
But because they say they're homeless, they just let it go. I mean, it's just mind-boggling that we've allowed this to happen in our society. We always want to talk about, oh, we got to have housing for the homeless, housing for... Well, it isn't just housing. You got to treat the mental illness, the drug addiction,
mm-hmm.
all of those kinds of things, and you got to get them off the street.
Yeah.
And
the common workers like you and me, we pay our taxes. We own our own homes and businesses, and we got to do all these things for the homeless. They basically get away with anything they want, scot-free.
That's exactly right. And we don't, you know, we have been collecting millions and billions of dollars over the last 25 years, particularly in King County. They, you know, they're the largest county. Every court document has a fee with it, and it's usually a substantial fee that's supposed to go for low-income and homeless housing. Well, I want to know where has that money gone. I mean, it's billions, if not billions of dollars that over the last 20 years has been collected. And yet the problem is worse than it's ever been. And it's just getting bigger and bigger. And we won't do anything about it.
And the last time I talked with you, you were serving a lot of transportation committees. What are some of the things you're working on, and what committees do you serve this year?
Well, I'm still ranking member on transportation, and I'm also the ranking member on labor and commerce. Over the interim, I worked with my staff, three of our partisan staff people, and we put together a plan on how to address the energy in the state of Washington. It's called Power Washington, and it covers everything from hybrids to hydrogen to dams and other ways of generating electricity. It covers sequestration in our forests. Covers modular nuclear reactors because it's a plan. Because right now, the other side of the aisle doesn't have a plan. Our governor doesn't have a plan. It is. Well, we're going to mandate that by 2050, you know, no carbon. We're going to mandate by 2035 that we're not going to approve any more gas-powered cars. And now they want to make that 2030. But there's ways we can go to improve our environment. But we don't have to kill our economy to do it. And still address the things that people are concerned about, and that's what we have tried to address in this plan. So.
In our county, something very controversial is solar. That's a big thing down here, and a lot of people say, well, you know, we need solar, we need some kind of business. But a lot of folks are saying, yeah, but if you put solar in, it's just going to ruin our county as far as the visibility, the farmland we have. So do you have some thoughts on solar development and where it's going?
Well, the challenge we have in Washington is the governor set up a group, I think it's called EFSC, and don't ask me what that synonym stands for, yeah. But they have unbelievable authority. I know that in Yakima County, there's three or four solar farms that are trying to go in. Personally, I think some of the places where they're putting them is way outside of east, got this right, east of Yakima, mm-hmm. In land that is not irrigated. I don't even think it's farmed. And so, I mean, that's a reasonable approach to me. But still, the county should have authority to approve those. But the governor wants to bypass the county. They don't want any input in the county, all in the name of expediting the building of these farms. And we can do better than that. I mean, the challenges we have with the solar is there's no plan because those solar panels don't last forever. There's no plan, though. What are we going to do when their life expectancy is up, which is probably like 20 years? What are we going to do? California is already finding solar panels in their dumps, and they're full of elements that you don't want to have seeping into your ground. But mm-hmm. there's no plan in this state as to what we're going to do, and right. then. You don't see solar farms over here on the west side of the state. No. They want to put them all on the east side of the state. Same way with wind farms. What are you going to do with those turbine blades when their life is up, which is 20 to 25 years? What are we going to do with them? They're a block long. I mean, my God.
You know, yeah.
You're going to same way with batteries and EV cars. There's no plan. We got to, you know, they just want to say, we're going to do this. But there's no plan on that. What are the ramifications? How do we address those? And that's what we tried to do in Power Washington.
All right. And I want to ask you one more question. Do you have any specific bills sure. you're working on this year you'd like to talk about?
Oh, I'm working on a couple of things. I have a bill that would allow for some B&O tax credits for the research and development of hydrogen and the production of hydrogen. I think that has gotten some legs. I have a bill that says you can't build a tiny home or a homeless encampment within 1,000 feet of a school. Interestingly, I tried to pass that bill 3 years ago. And it didn't go anywhere. And then about a month and a half ago, the governor came out and said, hey, we shouldn't be building tiny homes next to schools or homeless encampments. So we dropped the bill again. We'll see what happens. But those are a couple of things. Working very hard on trying to find the funding for the Hood River Bridge.
Oh, yeah.
And getting that bridge replaced. I think we're making progress. But we got a long way to go.
How do you like the boundaries of the new 14th district now? I mean, it takes in more of Yakima, right?
It does, yes. I lost Skamania County, which, I picked it up in 2012 is when it actually came into mm-hmm. effect. Very good people. I very much appreciated representing them, and sorry to lose them, but, it's the way life is these days, and we gotta adjust to the changes that we've seen. So
you even had a slice of Vancouver too.
I did. Yeah, I had about 6,000 people down there. That unfortunately, I hardly met any of them, but they were vocal. They contacted us, and we tried to respond and represent every citizen within our district. But we also look at things on a holistic level as well. So,
and enjoyed your town hall with Jim Osbrecker here about a month ago. That was nice.
Well, I appreciate that. I thought it went very well, and I like those kinds of things. I like to hear what is on our citizens' minds. Gives us some insight and some direction. So that's always helpful.
Well, thanks for representing us so well in the Senate. Appreciate you taking your time to talk to us, and we'll see you in about 3 weeks, okay?
Sounds very good. Thank you for the opportunity. You have a good day.
You too. Senator Curtis King here on KLCK.